So, this is the second talk of the day on boundaries, but I think it's to get the foundation of why we're doing what we're doing and how we're moving it forward. When I was listening to Eckhart Tolle's theme on the evolution of consciousness, he explained it real well. He has a very nimble and beautiful way of expressing himself, but he didn't, at least from my perspective, didn't give me a perspective of where we were going or how to get there. And that is essentially that's of importance. We can flounder around for a long time. And if you just ask yourself, does reality hold boundaries? And flying from 30,000 feet, you can obviously see that the physical boundaries we align on Earth are not seen in the from the air or from space. But what about our mental boundaries? What about the boundaries we set for ourselves and we determine as accurate and true? Well, if we realize that the fundamental essence of life is free of concepts, we have to understand that the essence is essence. It doesn't need any additional comment about itself. But the sense of self needs a lot of comment. It needs to constantly reassert its individuality, that it exists in and of itself. So anytime you add something to essential reality, then you lose essential reality in the formation that you've just included, in the conceptual formation you've just included. You've added an idea to something that does not hold ideas. So once you've set a concept on top of fundamental reality, the essence of reality, then the idea, the concept takes over in terms of how it forms and expresses itself in our seeing. Now, why would we do that? Because fundamental reality in essence doesn't hold us. It doesn't hold you, doesn't hold me. Like a young child is born into that essence. And you can feel it. The child's just kind of floating around in some sort of cosmic soup that doesn't really have a self-definition. And the young child is trying, infant, we're talking about just a newborn, can't figure out, who he or she or they are in relationship to the external world. So that's not helpful. They've got to have a self-concept in order to manage and navigate this plane of existence. So they develop one through learning and through expression and through imitation. Slowly over the years, they develop a strong sense of self-concept. So now we're left with a self-concept of on top of the fundamental essence of life. It's not that that shouldn't happen. It needs to happen in order for differentiation to take place. You're not going to do well in the world if you can't differentiate. So once that occurs, there's differentiation, and that differentiation is associated with the ideas I have about myself that I've learned over time from a number of different incidences. And so that layer, those layers of conceptual ideas about ourselves are all conceptual. And they're on top of the fundamental reality that the child was born into. He or she or they don't lose that fundamental reality. It's just that their attention goes towards the definitions, the distinctions, because that's how they have to navigate their way across space and time in this consciousness. So we add those boundaries in order to survive, really. At some point, survival is not a problem, but we continue to hold on and navigate and reinforce those boundaries, even though we no longer need them. In fact, we're afraid that we'll lose our self-definitions, because at one point we would have if we gave up those boundaries too quickly. But they're in there. Believe me, the conceptual boundaries, the ideas of those memories are embedded within our system. And we no longer have to practice and reinforce those boundaries in order to survive or in order to navigate. We have a sense of ourselves in relationship to other things. This is me, this isn't me. So that's all important and necessary, but we become tied to them. They strangle us. And that's what we're exploring now, is a time to let them go. It's not as if we don't know they're there. That we forget, once we let go of them, that we forget who we are. We don't. We don't become confused and disoriented. You know exactly who you are. You can say through all the memories and stories that you've held in your life to depict an exact sense of who you are. But you're not invested in them. This is freedom, as opposed to being without concepts. Freedom is knowing, having that sense of knowing at hand if you need it, but not investing them in the idea that this is who you are. So you can then use the information you have acquired over your life and also at the same time be free of that very identifying form. So once you're free, and freedom means you just return to the silence you were prior to the conceptual overlay, that silence has always been with us. It's just been hidden. So if we're willing to be quiet in stillness, then the concepts fall away. The concepts need our reinforcement and our noise and our encouragement to stay active and stay present as my identity. So when we're quiet, and let me just say that quiet is not out of the range of any of us. It's that close. It's a willingness to release the concept, that's all. Not to invest in it anymore. And when that's done, the release, then there's stillness. There's no other concept that's between you and fundamental reality. It's not as if we lose our fundamental reality. How can you lose what you fundamentally are? You can't lose it. You can just cover it over and pretend that you're the noise rather than the stillness. But what you regain access to the stillness, the noise can be used but not abused as a self-identity. What happens for us is that we get lost in the boundaries we have cemented into ourselves as the true representation of this expression of form called me. Now we are losing our true identity, and even more tragically, we don't want to go back. We don't want to lose ourselves. We hold the boundaries, offer us a conceptual idea of ourselves. And we like that. We've grown into it. We like who we are, or we don't like who we are, which is exactly the same compelling force that keeps inviting them forward, struggling against who we are or loving the sense of who we are. It doesn't make any difference, not to a boundary formation. And so we cultivate and reinforce boundaries actively, and we identify with those boundaries. And if you looked around, I mean, you say, okay, yeah, I'm an individual body, mind, self. Look, there I am. There I am. And so we establish the perimeters of who we are. And we make sure that those perimeters have the accompanying sensations associated with us. And anything outside of that is foreign to us because, you know, I can feel the wind on my skin, but I can't feel the wind internally. That's what we say. But it's only because we created a sensation called skin that we keep everything outside of skin from us as being us, instead of releasing the need to call something a sensation that divides. We could call that sensation something that's included within the sense of self, and everything outside of that is also included. And we'll get to this in a moment, but I want to get a sense that, let's look at some of these conceptual boundaries we impose on ourselves for definition. Basically, we do it for definition. But also, when you define yourself, you're also eliminating the rest of that as not being you. So you're defining what's outside of you, and you're defining what's inside of you as being me. And that, depending upon the number of boundaries we use and the amount of force we have within each boundary, that narrows the scope of our being whenever we set a new boundary. So there's self and other. That's an obvious boundary. And there's the self divided, the sense of me divided between the persona, the part of me I like, and the shadow, the part of me that I distance myself from and fight with. That's a boundary. We aren't open to the whole of ourselves. We're afraid of the wicked part of ourselves. We're afraid of the shadowy, evil part of ourselves. But we love the persona, the thing that's likable, the joy that we feel, the kindness that we have. All of those things are beautiful. So we push down and repress the shadow and glorify the persona. Well, that doesn't get rid of the shadow. Repressing it just makes it more active, but unconscious. So it comes up in ways that are repressed, but it shows itself nevertheless. So that's a boundary. Separating the sense of self from the mind from which it is derived is another boundary. I was mentioning that today. You think that you, the sense of you, is somewhere outside of the mind that has a mind, but is of different nature than the mind. Well, I challenge you to find yourself. If that's true, you can find your mind, but can you find yourself? Outside of the mind, you can't find yourself. In fact, with the right electrodes and the right apparatus, you can find the sense of self within the mind as being a sensation of me. Somewhere in there is the memory that's associated with the self, and the brain can be electroded, whatever the word is, arranged so that it feels the sense of self as of whatever it feels itself to be, which is always a thought and concept, because that's all the mind holds. It doesn't hold a real sense of self. It holds the idea of a sense of self. So one of the ways to break through that boundary is to start inviting the mind to contain yourself. Bring the sense of self into the mind so that you don't feel like you're living outside of the mind, having a mind, but you're an active display of the mind. So that's another boundary. Separating body from mind, as if the body were somehow an attachment to this whole thing of self. And if you quiet a little bit and drop the need for that separation, you can feel the body come alive as mind. And I mean, there are some trillion cells there that are intelligence in and of itself. Doesn't get its intelligence from the mind. It gets its intelligence from itself. It's carrying on multiple duties that the sense of I has no idea, is completely unconscious to. And so that's all part of the working mental organization of the way this mind-body works. And then, of course, we have the total organism separating itself from the external environment. Again, by the skin. And that's a real shame. because you cut yourself off from the vastness of space, the vastness of the living organisms around you, and you disconnect from that. And that's why I was mentioning, you know, some cultures, like the Japanese culture, go out deliberately into the forest and they forest bathe. They let the forest just surround and consume them without them establishing a differentiation between themselves and that living environment. So that's another expression of it. Now, here's one that we cut ourselves off from, which is perhaps the most destructive of all. And that's form separated from spirit, existence, aliveness. Forms, the sense of things being individually what my mind says they are, the forms of the world, and the formless nature of reality. Formless nature, our true essence is formless. It can't be seen. You can see forms, so the mind has to create appearance in order for it to identify something. But since the mind in its essence is formless, it can't look back and see itself. And so spirit, or where the spiritual journey goes towards, spiritual journey goes towards, is towards that which can't be seen. Now, how are you going to get somewhere where you can't see where you're going? Well, there is a way, and we'll be talking about that. If there weren't, we would all be stuck in forms for the rest of our life. But you have to be quiet, because forms exist as themselves as we invest our conversation, our ideas, our words, and memories into them. That's what makes a form a formation. Formations don't exist without something being invested in them, words, concepts being invested in them. So again, I want to ask, does reality have boundaries, you see? Anything that's held in isolation from everything else has a boundary. What advantage does it give us? As I've already mentioned, each time we draw a line of division internally, my body, my mind, my persona, or externally, others, the external world or nature, we establish a narrowing definition of ourselves while increasing our psychic distance from others. So fundamentally, it provides a definition. I am this and I am not that. And the sense of self survives on definitions, conceptual ideas about itself. So it needs boundaries to be able to prove that the conceptual idea is real and that he or she or they are real as well. And that fundamentally is why we do this. But you can break it down, because they're ideas, they're concepts. And when you see a concept for what it is, which is a thought-induced layer upon what is there, when you keep going down into what is there, you get into further and further conceptual ideas, perhaps more subtle, that we keep naming and naming and naming to reinforce the boundaries we have. So arm goes from arm to sensation of the cellular movement to quiet, dispersed sensing to whatever else, you see. As long as we keep defining it, the boundary remains. But if you're quiet with it and just feel it for what it is, without naming it, the boundary goes away. That's the definition of why we do have a boundary, is to keep us protected and identified. And all we have to do is to be quiet with it for it to go away. So I want to talk now about something that I mentioned I would and I need to, and that is wise boundaries. Those are boundaries of basic self-respect and autonomy. You know, I don't touch me, do not disrespect me, do not underpay me, Do not treat me like an imbecile. I am to be treated with the dignity I deserve. That's a wise expression of yourself. It's not wrapped in a boundary. It just prevents intrusion into areas of personal autonomy that you would don't want people to intrude upon. And people define those areas. But no one should have to give them up or have that violated. Everyone should have the ability to say, no, that's not okay. And to remain and throughout your life with some sort of way of expressing the no, I call it the no of love, without an apology. No, it's not okay. So you learn to practice that. And if some of you, us, because we were young and we had those boundaries violated, there's a fear around first having those boundaries. Also, I shouldn't say fear, there's an overreaction to keeping people away and distant from us. There might be, because they've been violated, you've been violated in the early part of your life, likely. So you see that with that kind of, there's a disconnection. There's the no is not really coming from love. It's like, no, the fear comes from fear. No, stay away from me. And that is where the psychological work has to happen so that you can say the no and stay connected. You don't lose the no, you just stay connected. And so that's what I call the no of love. And sometimes we need to put distance between ourselves and others or our friends and relatives. So the no of love can be used to establish that distance, yet remain connected. There's one, I just learned this word, I don't know where I've been, and it's the word gaslighting. I don't think it's a new word, but it's new to me. And it's a specific type of manipulation where the manipulator is trying to get someone to question his or her reality, memory, or perceptions. So they undermine the stability of the person by calling into question that person's reality. It's a terrible, terrible manipulation that really needs to be stopped if you feel that happening to yourself. We have politicians to do that just by repeatedly saying things that are not true. They call into question those of us who perceived one way and have us encourage us to see what we know to be true in a false, interpreted in a false way. So I would really suggest that you stop that. You know what's true for yourself. Just call an end to it. So dismantling conceptual boundaries of division depends upon the full understanding of wise boundaries and not confusing the two. We are not dismantling wise boundaries, the ability to say no, stay self-respect and protection. Those boundaries are needed. We are releasing unneeded conceptual boundaries that split our psyche in two. So that's what this weekend is about. Wise boundaries remain after the release of conceptual boundaries. No matter how awake you are or will be, you can always and will always put limits on what, through self-dignity, what is imposed upon you. No, this isn't right. I'm not doing this. That's intrinsic to being alive, is to know those boundaries. Okay, so let's go into a little bit about the technique that I've used and I know well to eliminate false boundaries. It's an ancient technique. It's the Avaita school. It's called NETI, 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 not this, not that. And I didn't even know it had a name until I'd been practicing it for many years, and then I discovered that it was a school already of long duration. In fact, I was with Nisargadatta in 1979, I think. And, you know, I was dressed as a monk. I was, and I was sitting in front of him, and he was asking me questions about being a monk. And he says, what are you going to do after you leave here? And I said, I'm going to go sit a Goenka course, who was the consummate, Vipassana teacher at the time in India, which is where I was. And he says, oh, why are you going to do that? And I said, using the words that I had learned, I said, because I have defilements I need to get rid of, or something like that. And he looks at me, up and down. He says, I don't see any defilements. And I thought, man, that guy's blind. But he was seeing me from the truth of what he knows someone to be. He was seeing me without boundaries. He was seeing my essence. And I was looking at me covered with boundaries, covered with my ideas, and needing some way out. So I was seeking a school that would allow me to dissipate what I thought were the troubling aspects of myself. Okay? So he was showing me that what he was seeing was not the essence. He was seeing neti neti. He was seeing that the ideas that I were carrying, when properly seen, were nothing. Not this. You're stopping prematurely. Keep going with your not this, not that, until you reach something that cannot be dismissed, and that sustains itself because it is itself, and not a concept of itself. See? So this, we are stepping out of the conceptual prison we have imposed. Neti not this, and that's what inquiry does. Inquiry is the path towards not this, not that. Because when you see it, like how you know you're not your thought, because you see them floating by. You see it. You can't be it, and you can't think it and see it at the same time. There it is, right there. You know, I've got to put out the trash. I've got to put out. It comes right across as a thought. But that's not who you are. That's just the conceptual idea of the moment and what you need to do within it. And we confuse that by claiming that to be our sense of self. But if it were our sense of self, you wouldn't be able to see yourself. You can't see the essence. The essence is hidden because it's of us. What is of us can't be seen as an objective thing outside of us. So thoughts are occurring, and I am not thinking them. Emotions and our narrative and all of the memories, all of that, are just laid on there as memory pathways in the neurological system. And if you happen to interact with an object or a situation or an emotion that you've had before, up comes the pathway of that memory with all the cringing or anxiety associated or delight associated with that emotion, thought, or memory. We can't stop there. That's too limited. That's like explaining the essence of something by talking about its color and shape. It just doesn't get to it. It's not a fulfilling explanation of the intrinsic nature of anything. So boundaries force us to go into what we know to be, what we know ourselves to be through having created that boundary. Look. Don't tell me I don't have a skin that feels the inside from the outside. Now I know that inside here, you can call me a not self, an emptiness, you can call me anything, but I know I'm in here. And I know what's outside of me is outside of this skin. Okay, well, You can do that for the rest of your life and then some. Many of us will stay within that captured sense or identification, or you can express the neti-neti of it. If I can feel my skin as a sensation, why am I defining it as mine to begin with? Why am I defining the sensation as skin? And why am I saying that this skin is a part of the inside and not just part of the total space of both? You see, we've redefined and reboundaried each of our definitions so that we are narrowed down to defining ourselves by how we've always defined ourselves. I'm 6 feet, I've got this, I'm this much, I have this, I've gone to this school, been there. That's it. That's the explanation of who I am. Well, how about dropping those ideas? What's left? Don't want to drop those ideas. I want to stay within the boundary of what I know myself to be. See, it's a selection. It's a choice. The four foundations I wrote about are just that. They just show the conceptual nature of the ways that we identify ourselves until there's nothing left for us to do except the display of mind, and it has a particular way of addressing that one. So we want to stand. This is where you want to, the movement of freedom, of moving to our essence, is learning to stand on our own two feet, not inviting other people's description of us as being true, not requiring or leaning on others for self-validation. Not standing on our own two feet in complete autonomy means we are free of the ideas that we have imposed upon ourselves through authority figures, through our own authority, through our history, which we don't care. Those are just memories. What's left after you do something wrong? The memory that you've done something wrong. Now you can berate yourself forever from the memory, or you can learn what you needed to learn when it happened and release the memory in the tortured hereafter that you carry it with you. Simply by being still. We are not our memories. We're not what we thought we'd be. That's standing on our own two feet. And this standing, there's a solidity. There's a stability in wisdom that is garnered over the years of self-exploration, that the wisdom holds the stability of wisdom. Even if the world is to be turned upside down, which it may well be in the future, with uncertain weather and climates and forest fires and tornadoes and hurricanes and on, even if the snow caps melt, and we have just a spot of land to live on, even if we still stand on our own two feet. Because wisdom is not disarranged. It's not chaotic. It doesn't lose itself. It knows itself. And when it knows itself, it stands, and it's solid in its standing. If you look for outside sources like boundaries in order to prove your existence, then you're going to be very upset when those concepts get to be shaken in you. Which is one of the reasons sometimes I was warning today, people move too fast, too quickly into the alleviation, the release of boundaries before they have the wisdom to know what's left and to be stabilized in what's left. You see? And that happens for most of us over a graduated period of time. And the key to being ready to do that is a genuine curiosity and interest in the subject. That's internally the mechanism that says, okay, I'm ready to explore this a little bit. Fear and a sense of trepidation and feeling like I have to do this is a completely wrong set of indications of readiness. This gets tricky and can get chaotic. Give up boundaries? I mean, good Lord, what are you doing? Nobody on the street. Everybody would think you were insane. And you have to stand on your own 2 feet and know you're not. That's standing on your own 2 feet. When society as a whole says, well, this guy's insane. Huh? Now, it's also interesting that opposites are created through boundaries we impose. Think of a circle, the circumference of a circle, inside the circle and outside the circle, is just a line. Release that line and the circle's inside merges with the circle's outside, undifferentiated. And opposites are exactly that same thing. I was listening to NPR. It was, what's the whole day, the 14th of, I'm telling you, age. The February 14th, Valentine's Day. Thank you very much. My mind worked for once. Valentine's Day. Okay, so it was a NPR, National Public Radio, was talking about Valentine's Day. It was talking about a romantic breakup, you know, when you have a romance and you broke up. Okay, so it says the pain you have after the breakup is exactly equivalent to the pleasure you felt when you got together. It's a conservation of opposites. And it was nice because it fits perfectly into this talk of boundaries. So how do we bring those qualities of pain and pleasure back together as a whole once we have felt the pain of connecting and the once we felt the pleasure of connecting and the pain of disconnecting? How does that come back in? Well, it was a very wise segment of the show by facing directly the unacceptable pain. We can hide from the pain and we can be open to the pains. But just listen to how they talk about, they had some psychologist or something. You go into that sense of having been together and the pleasure it was to be together by reading all the letters and reliving the photos in your album and allowing the memory to come forth in those pleasurable times and to really get a sense of how it was a very pleasurable experience, and I appreciated there were times, rough times and all, but basically overall, they were great. Then you throw them all away and burn them. By seeing, acknowledging, and allowing the loss, we move through it. And the pleasure and pain come back into each other. As a whole. So we invite wholeness rather than division. We learn the way out of separation through wisdom, not through struggle. That's so important in life, to get a sense of that, to get a way through this kind of differentiated boundary setting that we think we need. We break through our shadow because the shadow in the persona, the parts we like and the parts we dislike, lose their individual uniqueness and wholeness. Yin-yang. Yin-yang. It's just a squiggled line. Yin, black, yang. Christ said it. Resist not evil. What a statement. I don't know what the evangelicals say about that. They probably pass over it. Resist not evil? What do you mean resist not evil? Become evil? Why not resist? My whole life I've resisted, okay? Because evil is in contrast. It is defined. It has its characteristics when it's severed off from the whole of morality and goodness. Now you have morality. Morality itself is a tension. Ethical, being good, being perfect, you know, and never good enough, and having that tension you can feel in some vice presidential candidates. I'm not talking about the current one, where you could feel that the moral tension of being right and really an upright Christian and not faltering and on, you just set these unhuman, they're not even human, boundaries upon ourselves of what's right and what's wrong, instead of being whole. Now here's the incredible, true but incredible revelation in being whole. Inside wholeness and outside wholeness and all around and in complete wholeness, there's basic goodness. Because you live within a system, and I'm using words that are not true to, but it's making a point, in which there is a natural seeing of things being together. When you see things being together, it's seen in holistic terms. And therefore, there's what comes out is the heart, basic goodness. It's not a tension or contrasted heart. It's not heart based upon some other aspect. It's heart expressed in wholeness. You live ethically. You don't lie. You don't lie. You live ethically. Now, it's interesting. Let me just, because we misunderstand, you know, we say, tell the truth. Well, no, you say what's true and useful. If it's not useful, you don't say it because it just comes back to hurt. The usefulness is the heart element of basic goodness. You see the readiness of for somebody to hear. You know what you know, and you could say the whole thing. Or you just wait for someone to be open to the feedback you would like to give. And that's the heart. So there's truth inside of heart. So you say what is true and useful. If the person says, do you think I'm this? And you don't think she or he or they are that. You just remain quiet. Well, I don't know. What do you think? You just deflect it. Because it'd be hurtful to say what you know they don't want to hear is that really you look really overweight. Or whatever other form of insult you might offer. See, the whole thing becomes heart-based. Because wholeness is heart-based. You get evil when you take wholeness and split it down and pit one side against the other. You think it's going to go away? No, it's going to amplify. It's going to get your attention. You tried to smother me. I'll show you. You can't smother me. See, so this is just sanity, really. It's not. And there's love. And I'm not talking about individuated love. I mean, we practice that with metta and all the other strategies we do, which are good because when you practice something, you get a sense of a direction for that you're wanting to take, and there's a deep sense of a purpose in life when you're directing yourself towards the inclusion of others, which is true metta, which is true. But it's still fabricated in the sense it's coming, and usually does come, in the opposition, from the opposition of not loving, of just being kind of brittle and unconnected and disconnected. So it comes, but it's not, true love doesn't express itself. There's no opposite to holistic love. It doesn't have an opposite. That's what I was talking about, the know of love. From love, from holistic love, no. You can't do that to me. I'm sorry. No, you're not doing that. Or yes, please come. Yes, how are you? Yeah. Like, there's no division there, you see? It's something really beautiful about that few people know. And it's all can be explored and fully felt, fully alive, without boundaries. Because without boundaries, we have no definition. We know who we are. Don't get confused. Oh, without definition, no, you know who you are. That's in the cells of your body. You're not going to forget that, okay? You don't have to keep rehearsing it every single second in order to know who you are. You can let it go as an idea that it has a value and a limitation. And now we're seeing its limitation, and I don't have to live with that idea when I see its limitation. Doesn't mean I forget about myself. It means I'm just not going to live as if this were true about me. It's an idea about me. So I don't know how many of you are still with me. But I'm going to stop now. We're going into this thing, and tomorrow gets richer and deeper, and I hope you all come back. It doesn't, the second day is always, for me, richer and deeper than the first one. And tomorrow we really start looking at some of the issues associated with boundaries. Okay, so let me see what we're supposed to be doing here. We have walking break till 2:45. Okay, and then we'll have a guided inquiry at 2:45. All right, so let's take a 10-minute break and see you back. All right.